Fort Stewart, Georgia is the largest army base east of the Mississippi River. It's at a staggering 280,000 acres covering this massive installation. Fort Stewart lies 41 miles southwest of Savannah and roughly a four-hour drive southeast from Atlanta, Georgia. Established in 1941, Fort Stewart is home to the prestigious 3rd Infantry Division. Now, Fort Stewart and its counterpart Air Base Hunter Army Airfield, that's located down in Savannah, Georgia, they have approximately 22,000 active duty soldiers, 43,000 family members, and over 4,500 civilians and 19,000 retirees. That's according to a 2020 census. So this, you guys, you can imagine, is a massive military installation. Outside of the main base itself is located in Hinesville, Georgia. I actually live there, wasn't a fan, but it is what it is. There's a very extensive training area. There's shooting ranges that the soldiers use. There's a lot of terrain for ruck marches and training exercises.
What is a ruck march?
Girl, we're going to go on one as a workout. Let's do it.
Okay, never mind. Gnarly. I don't want to know.
So it's just a really vast land for really all these military units to kind of use for their respective ready for deployment combat training needs. So you guys are probably wondering, Raina and Marie, what case are we going to be talking about that involves the military and Fort Stewart? Civilians, they raise their right hand to swear, protect and defend our nation. They don't commit murders.
Sadly, they do.
Right? And even the best behind the great military service uniform have very dark secrets and are capable of creating a web of lies that you honestly would probably think you would only read in fictional books. But today, we are here to tell you the story of a crazed group of soldiers who were part of a secret militia they had formed that would literally go as far as to murder their own comrade.
Jeez.
All to make sure that their secret plan to overthrow the government would not be risked.
And during this vicious murder, a young teen's life would be taken as collateral. What the GBI and military criminal investigators would uncover would rock the army posts and those closest to the case. All were left in absolute disbelief that anyone, let alone a United States soldier, would be capable of such heinous acts. It was a Tuesday, December 6, 2011, 30 minutes away from Fort Stewart, when a group of fishermen out for an early morning catch would come across a grisly scene. They would stumble across the bodies of 19-year-old Michael Rorick and 17-year-old Tiffany York, who was his girlfriend. Both had tragically been shot. Michael, twice execution style, found laying on the ground near the water, and Tiffany shot twice between her eyes, still located inside of the couple's 2016 Nissan Altima in the passenger seat. When GBI was called to report to the scene, a piece of information given by the fishermen was that a weapon was found in Michael's hand, leading the initial thoughts by investigators to believe that they were looking at a possible suicide out on Morgan Lake Road. It wasn't until the investigators arrived on site that Special Agent Lindsay Smith checked out the couple's vehicle a little closer, inspecting Tiffany's deceased body and then Michael's to discover that there was no weapon in Michael's hand, instead a walkie-talkie. This was no suicide. This was a double homicide.
So Tiffany and Michael's young lives were gone. They were cut short from this earth in the most brutal way, but the investigators couldn't really wrap their heads around who and why this couple was targeted. It didn't really take long for investigators to link Michael back to Fort Stewart, Georgia. So at the crime scene that mid-morning, Tiffany York's cell phone kept ringing over and over with the contact on the phone as Mom. I can't, nor do I ever want to imagine how that phone call went that morning with the investigators on that scene and Tiffany's poor mother. It's got to be awful. Mm-mm.
So sad.
So Michael had actually just previously been discharged from the Army at the rank of private just 2 days before he was murdered. And he was most recently stationed at Fort Stewart. So it wasn't hard to identify him and his very recent military status. Now, 17-year-old Tiffany was a local high school student near Fort Stewart. And according to her sister, her and Michael had met online while he was still serving as an, you know, active duty soldier, and she was in high school. Now, Tiffany's sister and brother, Nick and Morgan York, had the most adoring words to say about Tiffany. They said she was very active in the school's yearbook program.
Oh my gosh, how sad.
I don't know. She was like constantly photographing everything. She was described as unique and caring and that she really just loved everybody. And you can tell by her pictures, she just really looks vibrant and like very full of life. And her brother also said that she also sparkled and glowed.
Oh, that's so cute. So Tiffany's family believed that Tiffany was in a really good place. She was super happy with Michael and the current state of their relationship. After Tiffany's death, though, you know, they went through her diary for any possible clues into her murder. But instead of finding anything to assist in the investigation, they just found countless notes of her expressing her love for dear Michael. The two had big plans to move out to the West Coast together and start a new chapter of their lives. But in order for that to happen, Michael would need to separate from the military early, and he was only 4 months in after completing boot camp, so his contract was nowhere near anywhere of ending. So his plan was to get discharged from the military and be done so he could begin the rest of his life with his new love. In early December 2011, Michael's plan was in place. He received a discharge from the Army, and all his plans were set for him and Tiffany to take off to the West Coast. This was just before their lives were tragically taken. Civilian investigators on the case of Michael and Tiffany's murder dug in to looking into Michael's friends on base, people that were in his unit, and anyone that would have any information about what Michael was up to in those days leading up to the murder, anything to shed light on possible enemies he may have had. Military investigators quickly handed over the names of some people that Michael was close with to the GBI, and the interviews began.
So the military and civilian authorities did work hand in hand investigating this case. Generally, if a murder or crime happens off of a military installation, the civilian authorities have the right to investigate and or prosecute on their end because they have jurisdiction, i.e., if a crime occurred in civilian territory, the military member that commits that crime are subject to punishment under the Uniform Military Justice System as well. Anyway, breakdown. Let's say you get a DUI and you're in the military, you can be punished by the civilian side and the military side. So obviously it varies case by case of crime and severity, but nonetheless, both the civilian and the military were on board tackling this murder, just trying to find out what happened to this young couple. It didn't really take long to zero in on four suspects in the murder of Michael and Tiffany. Four soldiers, to be more specific, four U.S. soldiers from Fort Stewart that were assigned to the Army's 4th Brigade Combat Team, 3rd Infantry Division. So less than a week after the tragic murders, Private Christopher Salmon, Sergeant Anthony Peden, Private Isaac Aguihe, and PFC Michael Burnett were all arrested in the connection with the murder. The ages of these soldiers ranged from 19 years old to 26. Now, due to the military being involved in this case, much of the information surrounding like their arrests and how they came to the arrests, they weren't released to the public. But what we do know, as we've investigated this case, is there was way more than just the murders of Michael and Tiffany.
The GBI uncovered that the men were leaders of a terrorist group called FEAR, standing for Forever Enduring, Always Ready. The group was classified as a terrorist group formed in an attempt to take over and overthrow the U.S. government. So, the men wanted to overthrow the government that they raised their right hand to swear to serve and protect, along with our great nation and all of its people. Like, how fucked up is that?
It's almost too much to really comprehend if you think about it.
I don't have that much time on my hands.
No.
But there's more, you guys. Kind of like one of those infomercials.
But wait, there's more.
There's more. So FEAR had made very intricate plans involving poisoning apple crops in the state of Washington and its water supply. They intended to bomb a hydroelectric dam in Washington, which was near the Columbia River in Wenatchee, a town that one of the FEAR members actually grew up in. They intended to blow up a water fountain in Savannah, Georgia, and kidnap the Army officers on the installation. They planned to take over the 4th Brigade Barracks as an initial attempt in taking over the entire Fort Stewart post, you guys. Four people.
Four people.
An entire military post. Like, no. But the most insane plot of them all was the group's plan to assassinate their commander-in-chief at the time, President Barack Obama. It's like, insert the mind-blown emoji here. Like, these guys are...
Can you imagine investigating it and finding all this out?
No, being part of the GBI, they're like, what? They also uncovered $87,000 worth of weapons, ammunition, and bomb-making material. But what does all of this have to do with the murders of Michael Rorick and Tiffany York? Well, Private Agihi, the ringleader of FEAR, had attempted to recruit Private Michael Rorick into FEAR and the plans of overthrowing the government.
And we read in our research that Isaac Agihi has this weird way of connecting with people. Like, he's very manipulative. He goes after people that maybe aren't very strong-headed because he knows that he can get them to do, like, what he wants.
So what a coward.
Yeah, and so the soldiers that he recruited, he targeted specifically because he knew that, like, he could control them.
Oh,
I know. He just sounds like a very sick individual. So Isaac came from a military family himself. His father was a combat engineer, and the family, of course, we can assume moved from base to base during the father's service in the military. So Isaac was homeschooled along with his five siblings. He grew up, and then he completed high school in 2009, and then he went on to attend the prestigious U.S. Military Academy School in West Point, New York. I mean, for sakes, this kid was going places. So while he was attending West Point, Isaac then met a woman by the name of Deirdre, who would then become his future wife. Not before he would be kicked out of West Point because of his relationship with her. I guess relationships maybe in their freshman year are frowned upon. It's against the school policy.
We're going somewhere else with this.
Yeah. So he got kicked out. So after that, Isaac and Deirdre then went to be stationed at Fort Stewart together. Now, Isaac was not the stand-up husband, literally by any means. He drank, he partied way too much, and could not for the life of him be faithful to his wife. So when Deirdre came back from deployment in Iraq in early 2011, it wouldn't be long before she was then pregnant with the couple's first child. But sadly, on July 17th, Deirdre, the expecting mother, was found dead in the couple's home. So the initial cause of death could not be determined, and the military couldn't really decide, like, if this was a homicide, was it natural causes? So they didn't necessarily close the case, but they couldn't figure out how she died. So later on that day, Isaac, I mean, who just found his pregnant wife dead, sends a text message to his mistress.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It says, "Baby, you want to know something sexy? I'm not working another day, baby. We'll have plenty of money. All I need is your body whenever I want it."
Jesus Christ.
Right?
Clearly he's a grieving husband, right? Nothing suspect there. So there was the initial investigation by the Criminal Investigation Command for the military into Isaac's role in the death of his wife. Yet no charges were brought forth against him due to the coroner's report, which stated her death was undetermined. Isaac went on to collect $500,000 in military life insurance in relation to her death. $100,000 of that were funds for funeral expenses, and the remaining $400,000 was for Isaac to collect and do with whatever he pleased. He had the time of his life spending all his money in strip clubs and partying. He bought cars for his militia members. And, oh, he also purchased a cache of weapons to fund FEAR at the staggering amount of $87,000. Y'all remember that number from a little while ago. $32,000 in weapons were purchased by Isaac from a local Wenatchee gun store in his home state of Washington just 2 months after his wife passed away. So Isaac, yes, did use that insurance money to fund his militia and their terrorist plots. Again, not much of a grieving widow, are we, Isaac?
So back to Michael and Tiffany. Now, with the plans of wanting to leave Fort Stewart behind and start this new chapter, Michael needed to separate himself from the FEAR group that Isaac had recruited him into. Sadly, it wasn't going to be that easy for Michael. See, Isaac and the other members of FEAR felt that Michael knew way too much, and if he left, he could tip off the secret plans that the group had, and they couldn't risk that. I mean, Michael knew way too much. There were also reports in our investigation that the FBI found out that Michael may or may not have stolen around like $10,000 of money from the militia group funds.
Why would you do that? These people are savage.
Right.
It's going to be your ass.
At first I saw like $5,000 and then I saw $10,000. And so I'm not 100% confident. Mm-mm. But what we do know is maybe Michael did steal some money.
I would not mess with that. No.
Now, on the night of December 5th, 2011, Michael Burnett, Anthony Peden, Christopher Salmon, and Isaac Agihi lured Michael out to the rural Morgan Lake Road area, and that was in Long County, Georgia. And they lured him out under the assumption that the group was just going to go do some target practice. They were going to go shooting at night
and
hang out. So Michael went along with it. So when the group arrived, Isaac ordered Sergeant Anthony Peden, an Iraq and Afghanistan war veteran, to shoot Tiffany York twice in the head before she could even step out of the vehicle. They didn't know that she was coming. Then he felt her for a pulse to make sure that the young teenager was actually deceased. Ugh. Isaac, the ringleader, then ordered Private Christopher Salmon to direct Michael Rourke onto his knees as Michael is literally screaming bloody murder, begging them to just spare his life. And at that moment, Christopher shot Michael twice, execution style.
That's brutal.
Very brutal. And I think the even worse part is that, like you said in the beginning, Tiffany died as collateral. If she had not been there that night, she wouldn't have been murdered. The group didn't even know she was coming.
Wrong place at the wrong time. So sad. So the group left the two teens there and they returned back to Private Salmon's house as if nothing happened, as if they didn't just literally wipe two innocent lives from this earth. Sadly, Tiffany was killed again only because she was at the wrong place at the wrong time. The group never intended for her to come along with Michael that evening, according to all of the reports, which is obviously devastating and people are just assholes and that's why I hate them. So once back at Christopher Salmon's house, the one that he shared with his wife, they all started a bonfire. They stripped their clothes off that they were wearing during the murder and threw them into the fire. They wanted to make sure that they got rid of anything with any trace evidence to cover up these murders just as, you know, the best way that they could.
Maybe they should jump into the fire themselves, right? For what they just did.
So Heather, Christopher's wife, gladly cooked for all of the men while they all partied and, you know, got rid of that evidence. Which I want to know, wouldn't you question why everybody's throwing their clothes into the fire?
Like, oh, yeah,
I mean,
no.
How much did she know, you know? Well, actually, I'm about to tell you guys how much she knew. So to put it bluntly, she was the mother hen of it all. Heather had managed the finances within the FEAR organization. She supplied them clothing, gloves, anything that the soldiers needed for the night of the murders. She was an accomplice.
100% Heather. Mm-hmm. So on December 10th, the residence of the Salmons was searched by the GBI. There, they found voice recordings, knives, prepaid phones, cameras. There was notebooks with all this militia commentary.
Oh my God.
A Russian M44, iPads, and like massive amounts of live rounds. So then on the 13th, Michael Burnett's house was then searched, to which the GBI recovered multiple firearms and ammunition, as well as a partial constructed pipe bomb.
Oh my God.
So it is all very clear to everyone investigating this case that these soldiers were literally starting to put their plan of overthrowing the base and the government into place. They were working on it. It's tragic anyway you kind of look at this case though, because one side of you wants to say thank God that this FEAR group was stopped before, you know, launching these attacks on the U.S. soil. But also along the way, these two lives were lost. You know what I mean? It's sad either way you look at it. So with the soldiers arrested and awaiting trial, something else in this case then gets revisited. Isaac Agihi's pregnant wife, Deidre's death. Now remember, the medical team classified it as not determined. But after Isaac's arrest, the Georgia State Medical Examiner's Office decided to like revisit and take another look. Thank God they did. Because her death was not an accident. No. She was murdered by Isaac. Now, during the autopsy, there were in fact more than 20 scrapes and like bruises on her body, more specifically her back and her head, but none of these were determined to be strong enough to kill her. So Isaac's tale of events of what happened were that he and his wife wanted to engage in rough sex. Therefore, he bound her hands behind her back with handcuffs. And I guess like she went along with this. This is not something out of the normal.
Is anybody buying this story?
They like to do, yeah, I don't know.
So in relation to this specific story and her death, one of Isaac's old army buddies testified in court that Isaac had told him he handcuffed his wife while they were having sex and then proceeded to strangle her with a plastic bag. So then on the prosecution side, Dr. James Downs stated that he believed Deirdre was strangled while handcuffed within a specific chokehold that the soldiers are trained to do, and therefore that is why no marks were left on her neck. Isaac was charged on both the army and civilian side with the murder of his wife and his unborn child. So Isaac, Anthony, and Christopher were all charged with felony murder, aggravated assault using a firearm while committing a felony, malice murder, and criminal gang activity. Georgia prosecutors said that they plan to seek the death penalty against all of the men. Michael Burnett decided he was going to assist prosecutors in exchange for a plea and a lighter sentence.
There wasn't much of a trial because in the end, all four soldiers ended up pleading guilty on all counts that they were charged with for the murders of Michael and Tiffany. Now, Isaac, he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole by a civilian judge after his guilty plea because he was the one that ordered the killings of Michael and Tiffany. Then in 2014, Isaac was given another life sentence without the possibility of parole, this time from a military judge, and that was for the murder of his wife and unborn baby. He will be serving out those life sentences in the state of Georgia. Both Anthony Peaton and Christopher Salmon were handed down life sentences, yet Anthony is going to be eligible for parole after 30 years, and the reasoning for that was because of his deployment history and his PTSD claims. He made a lot of these claims with his attorney during the trial, and that got him the possibility for parole, which, I don't know. His accounts of what happened that night were very interesting. Like, he's like, oh, I saw the door open and I thought I saw a gun and that's why I shot Tiffany because I have PTSD. I wasn't buying anything that he was saying.
Well, he was given specific instructions from another, which he executed.
Exactly. So his claims of what really happened were just not adding up with the facts.
And I'm in no way discounting anybody's PTSD. I'm just saying from what we know, like, no, you were told to do something and you did it.
Yeah.
And now you have to pay. Sorry. So Michael Burnett was sentenced to 8 years in prison for his role in the killings in exchange for his testimony at the trial against all the other militia members. He will also serve 40 years of probation upon his release. Heather and Michael pled guilty to 2 counts of voluntary manslaughter in the deaths of Michael and Tiffany, as well as 2 counts of violating the Street Gang Terrorism Act. She was only sentenced to 20 years followed by 10 years of probation. Myself, Marie, and surviving family members of Michael and Tiffany do not agree with Heather's sentence. They felt that it was way too lenient for her role in the case. I think she's just as guilty.
100%. I think she should have got a life sentence as well. They have 4 children, and I think that was kind of a push, too, to like not be in jail for so long because she has kids. It doesn't matter.
She supplied them with everything she needed.
She ran the book.
She managed the group. She helped get rid of the evidence.
She's just as guilty.
Go fuck yourself, Heather.
So in the aftermath of the murders of Michael and Tiffany, the surviving Rourke and York families filed a 10-page wrongful death lawsuit against the Army in 2014. They claimed that the Army could have prevented the murders of their loved ones. Now, in the original lawsuit, it stated the Army's negligence, acts, and omission, particularly its handling of an earlier investigation into the death of the gang ringleader's wife, we're talking about Isaac here, directly and foreseeably caused the deaths of claimant's children. Mm. Here was the issue with the lawsuit, though. Government entities are generally immune from these types of civil lawsuits. But since Michael and Tiffany were deceased at the time of the lawsuit that was brought against the Army, the families were actually able to file under the FTCA Act, which is the Federal Tort Claims Act. So when the lawsuit was initially filed, the family was actually seeking $30 million in compensation. They wanted $15 for Michael and $15 for Tiffany. The U.S. court judge, who was not named, he was actually considering the lawsuit, siding with Michael Rourke's family, considering his prior military service. But eventually, he took the government's side and he tossed the lawsuit out on the grounds that the family just didn't have any legal bias with their lawsuit.
So with that, the family went on to appeal the decision, which would pay out in their favor, because a new judge, Barbara Rothstein, took into consideration the fact that Tiffany was a civilian, and therefore the lawsuit could proceed under that FICTA Act. The lawsuit was settled outside of court in mediation, according to New York-based attorney Brian Brooke, who was representing both of the families. The Army did not by any means take liability or any sort of blame for the tragic murders, but agreed to pay out the families $4 million. $1.7 million would go to Michael Rourke's family, and $2.3 million would be given to the family of Tiffany. Obviously, this does not bring back their loved ones that were lost, and the family insists to this day that it was never about the money. It's always been about taking accountability for what happened to their children and how they feel the Army could have stepped in to intervene and potentially could have, you know, stopped the brutal killings of all of the kids involved.
Tiffany York's mother, Brenda Thomas, made a statement regarding the lawsuit saying that she wished that she actually never even had to file that lawsuit, and she wished that things were handled differently by the Army and that they had done their job in an earlier investigation into Isaac's wife, and maybe then her daughter would still be here. It also was very emotional to watch when the boys all were led into court, the four soldiers, the stepfather of Tiffany literally could not control himself, lunges at the guy, the one, Anthony, that actually shot his daughter, lunges at him in the courtroom. They have to like physically pry him off and escort him out. He's just full of all this rage. And he's like, you killed my daughter. And it's just, it's very emotional.
There were people involved in both families that were sad, obviously, that he didn't get to him. It was a very, very emotional court scene.
But all those men are now behind bars for the rest of their lives. And sadly, it won't bring Tiffany and Michael back. But hopefully now the military handles things differently. And everyone learned a lesson in this case.
Thank you so much for joining us today, you guys. Thank you for downloading, leaving those reviews. Thank you for all of the messages we're getting on social media. We love you guys with everything we have.
We hope you all have a safe weekend, and Raina and I will be back next Friday with a brand new episode.
Bye guys.